For Books in Motion in Spokane, Washington, this is Gene Engany reading The Derby Man by Gary McCarthy. Chapter 1. The three men crouched, hidden in the trees.
"That's him,"
the shortest of them whispered. Immediately his two companions moved deeper into the shadows.
"A regular pigeon, ain't he? Comes strutting through this park every morning at 11, plump and ready for the picking."
The tall, unshaven man beside him growled,
"Shut up. We'll jump him when he comes even with us."
But the short, excited one wasn't satisfied. Nudging the third man, he persisted.
"What do you think, Al? Ain't it just like I told you? Plump, fat, and wealthy."
Al moved his big, muscular frame into a better position and scrubbed his perpetually running, caved-in nose on a filthy sleeve.
"Yeah, shorty, you done good. The bide looks ready to be plucked. Probably has enough money in his wallet to keep us drunk for a month. And he sure as hell ain't gonna outrun us like that last guy you spotted."
"Oh, Al, how was that a—"
"Shut up,"
repeated the tall, thin man.
"Here he comes."
A moment later, the three muggers leaped out into the path of Darby Buckingham.
"Your wallet, mister, and fast if you don't want to beaten first,"
Al said menacingly. Darby stopped, dropping his leather-bound case to the grass.
"Gentlemen,"
he said, his black eyes going from one man to the next and finally resting on Al,
"I have nothing of value on my person, and I do wish you would reconsider your demand."
"Listen to him,"
giggled a man named Shorty.
"Did you hear that? He wishes we'd reconsider our demand."
Al drew a deep breath into his broad chest and balled a massive scarred fist into a knot.
"One last time, fat man. That's all I'm gonna ask."
Darby sighed.
"In that case, I suggest you attempt what you have planned."
The three men began to circle him, moving with practiced precision, Al coming in from the front, hairy arms up, mouth half-smiling, the other two pressing in from the sides. Darby Buckingham launched his squatty 5-foot-9-inch, 255-pound body straight at Al. He took one quick step forward and sent his immaculately manicured fist crashing through Al's rotting front teeth, lifting him into a high, flying arc. The tall, thin man hit him a punishing blow to the side as he swung to grab Shorty by the neck. Clutching the little man as one would a chicken, Darby propelled him up into the air and, one-handed, sent him smashing down into the thin man, the two pounding to the earth. They had not completely settled when he reached down, grabbed each by the collar, and cracked their heads together with an amazingly loud thunk. Several yards away, Big Al lay staring dazedly toward the thick branches high above. Darby surveyed the three thieves with repugnance. It was over. He picked up his undisturbed case and eyed it distastefully. Then he continued on with his short, jolting stride. Disdaining the best efforts of the city's carriage drivers to run him over, he marched down the avenue. At one point, he angrily stuffed an expensive-looking cigar into his mouth, lighting it on the move. Three blocks later, he tossed it disgustedly into the gutter and turned in at a huge building. Darby, still somewhat askew from his recent interruption, looked like a mean, short-tempered bear as he bowled through the outer offices of the New York Publishing House without pausing to look either right or left. At the door of the office marked simply President, a worried-looking secretary partly rose from behind her desk. She started to speak, but, observing the ferocious scowl on the angry face and the bristly way his mustache stood out, she completely lost her nerve and said nothing. Darby's hand hit the doorknob with such force that it set the kerosene office lamps quivering on the outer room walls. The door exploded inward to reveal a half-dozen carbon-copy black-coated men wearing looks ranging from outright fear to the shocked indignation borne by the central figure seated behind a massive desk. An expression of concern replaced the initial emotion and furrowed the prominent brow of J. Franklin Warner, President. The plaque on his desk harmonized with the dark, burnished paneling of the walls, the heavy, gold-woven draperies, and the magnificent Persian carpets that suggested even to the most casual observers that to be president of New York's largest and most successful publishing house